Welcome back to Immigrantly. I am your host, Sadia Khan. Today, I am talking to Adam Macias.
If ghosts are real, that means we are never alone. And that is pretty comforting.
He is a comedian, writer, and podcaster whose sobriety journey is just one chapter in his incredible story. Through his work, he's used humor to challenge norms, connect with audiences, and inspire others to reflect on their own lives.
Donald Trump completely humiliated Elon Musk in front of House Republicans, according to reports, saying that he won't go home. But are we really surprised that after helping him get elected, Trump is telling an immigrant to go back where he came from?
Adam is a storyteller, an artist, and someone whose perspective is as refreshing as it is thought-provoking. He hosts the podcast That Was Wild, where he engages in candid conversations with guests about their most extraordinary experiences. His stand-up comedy is known for its sharp wit and insightful commentary, where he really draws from his personal experiences to connect with audiences on a deeper level. Adam and I talked about a lot of things, including his sobriety journey. Joe Rogan.
When you see someone who makes a turn for the best, yeah. You get excited too. It's fun.
Andrew Tate.
A year and a half ago, I quit alcohol cold turkey.
And how young men these days are trying to reclaim their identity.
Because there's nothing uglier than an old infant. There's nothing good about people who don't grow up.
Oh, and Adam has a cat too. So we ended up exchanging notes about how much we love our furry friends. So without further ado, let's jump right in. So I was listening to your podcast, That Was Wild. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
So here's the thing. It's one of those podcasts that is so different from Immigrantly, and yet there are so many through lines and threads that I could connect with, like your post-election episode. Phenomenal. There was one episode that I was listening to recently where you guys talk about this dude who basically staged his own death.
Yes. Yeah, that was crazy. That was a crazy one.
That was wild.
He immigrated to a different country. He faked his death and immigrated to Eastern Europe. So there is a through line there.
Yeah. There is a through line, right? He's an immigrant somewhere else.
Yes.
Adam, how do you filter through these stories? How do you pick which story to share?
Well, first off, I want to say thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really excited. I actually listened to your post-election show with the AI at the border, and something about it really hit me as well. You can go back and listen to my episode where I was just almost numb as well. I was numb. You decided to talk to an AI expert about immigration. I decided to talk to one of my best friends about how Spider-Man is very important right now. So we're doing our own things. But honestly, yeah, no, it really is. Thank you again for so much for having me on the show. To answer your question, I I'm online probably way too much. I go on TikTok a lot. I have worked in the podcasting industry for a very long time. I've worked for a lot of news agencies. I was a producer for Hux, the publication, their daily news podcast for many years. I was a producer for a lot of other news podcasts. So I was kind of in the news sphere for many years. And then I had started a TikTok channel called The Daily Misinformer, where we had millions of views. And if you had never seen that before, we were kind of collect, we were like kind of monologue jokes, but online, essentially kind of like The Onion meets like the first 10 minutes of The Tonight Show.
Oh, that's fascinating. I like that.
And so I had been doing that for about 3 years, and I kind of trained my brain to like, anytime I saw a funny story or anything that kind of fascinated me, I just kind of saved the story. And the world kind of changed in those 3 years from 2020 to 2023, and online kind of changed. The monologue jokes weren't hitting so much, and I kind of wanted to do something different. And that's when I started That Was Wild. And I kind of wanted to make it more of a conversation with people, like, hey, let me show you this story. And so that's what I do on that show, of like, hey, have you heard about this guy named Ryan? He recently faked his own death and all that stuff. And so that's what I do on that show. I introduce wild stories as if I'm like, you know, sitting at the table, have you guys heard about this yet? And making more of a conversation. And I have, fortunately, you know, years of monologue joke writing and, you know, millions of views to back me up that, like, I think I have something funny to say behind it, you know, but trying to make it conversational behind it too.
Oh, it is absolutely conversational and it is funny. I wonder if there's been a story, a wild story, because most of them are wild, that really blew your mind away. You were like, oh my gosh, you know, you could never expect human experience to stretch that far for someone.
There's a lot. People are crazy. I mean, I try not to judge, really. I try not to judge too many people's existence. I mean, the crazy thing right now that I think is funny to me is, you know, how we are all coping on the left with the election loss. And because I'm online right now, I haven't talked about this on the show, so maybe you're getting an exclusive, but how there is a QAnon type conspiracy that it was stolen and all this stuff. And they're like very much talking in code and TikTok. And it's like, you guys realize you sound just like QAnon, but it's, oh, but we're right, you know? So the human experience is so interesting to me, in that, like, if maybe you're hurt or how you are experiencing the world, if you're in your own kind of lane too much, you don't necessarily see kind of the forest through the trees of like, oh yeah, maybe I'm just on TikTok and the difference is 4chan, you know, or something like that. It's very interesting. The most recent one that went very viral, I will say, is that we met this woman online who liked to go to prisons and meet, this is a trend, this is an actual trend, to meet men who freshly leave prison and essentially hook up with them. And the men are very appreciative and they're posting about kind of the journey of it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And the fascinating part about it to me was, one, we found a lot of people being very interested kind of about it in the comments, being like, the women, I don't know about this, but because I don't know how often you post online, but typically when you post a video online, it's usually there's like a 50% like, ah, I hate this, and like 50% I love this, right? But in the comments, it's all love. It is all, everybody loves this. It's like, what a great idea. There's no like, very few hate on it. And there's, I don't know why. I don't know why. It's something.
Yeah, but it makes sense, right? I mean, she's just being inclusive of everyone,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I wonder if you could just classify or categorize it as some kind of a fetish.
Yeah, I think there's something along the lines of, the way she framed it is that, like, online dating is so hard. She gets lied to all the time.
Okay.
So why not go to a place where, and the way we framed it as well is like, well, you know how tall they are because it's in the mugshot. You know where they've been. You know they have a good medical record. The women in there, and I think our video online has like close to like 7 million views and stuff like that. And it's a very funny moment in that, like, everybody's very supportive of it. And maybe it's a little tongue in cheek, but everybody's in on the joke. And it's, we didn't try to drag anybody. And we actually ended up, I found the video online of this woman named Lizzie, and the woman in the video reached out to us, and we actually got her on the show to interview her and have her talk. And she ended up having this amazingly fascinating story. And we've had those experiences more and more now that we've been doing this.
I can't wait to listen to that one. Yeah, men, please stop lying to women.
Yeah.
Look at the trauma you're causing all of us.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Adam, talk to me about your upbringing. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Sacramento. I grew up in what they call South Sac. My father, he was first generation Portuguese immigrant. And then my grandfather, I guess, kind of is like, it's almost like Native American in that, like, they've always been in California, essentially. But they're technically Mexican. But like Mexican by way of, we've always been here in California. And then when America bought California. And
what was childhood like?
It was pretty crazy. I grew up in a pretty ratchet family. But the fascinating thing about me is that my last name is Macias. I come off pretty white passing. I always joke that because my last name is Macias, I grew up in the suburbs. I was the Mexican kid in town, right? So I grew up thinking I was the Mexican kid. And then I moved to LA and then everybody thought I was Armenian because of how I look.
Why did you think you were the Mexican kid?
I stood out, I guess you could say. And I grew up very much wanting to whitewash myself. And it's something I've been trying to work on, kind of like learning how to talk about. But, you know, I wanted the blue eyes. I wanted the straight hair. So growing up, my grandfather did this thing to his kids. My grandfather is a fluent Spanish speaker. Same thing with my grandmother. She spoke fluent Portuguese. My great-grandfather, who we used to call Edipa, because whenever we entered a room, he would say, Edipa, which is Portuguese for what's up. I think that's the only Portuguese I know. Please come at me if in the comments if that's not true. But that's the only Portuguese I speak. Because they were all about upward mobility, and this is something in Mexican cultures or South American cultures, is that, and I learned this in college, they kind of decided to turn away from their South American heritage by not teaching their kids Spanish and embracing the Portuguese side. So they were raised to be mostly Portuguese. They did all the Portuguese functions. They, you know, ate soup fish and kind of did all the Portuguese gatherings and Portuguese fairs and all that stuff, and didn't really do a lot of the Mexican stuff, which is ironic because his family's from California, you know, and my grandmother's family immigrated here, came through Ellis Island and everything. All that to say, growing up, there wasn't a lot of Mexican influence. And specifically, my grandfather told my family he didn't want the neighbors having seen a bunch of Mexican kids running around the neighborhood speaking Spanish, because they thought that, you know, specifically that they just, it was to protect the kids, apparently.
How has that changed for you, like your connection to your Mexican heritage or owning your Mexican heritage?
It's funny. My dad was a landscaper. And so I grew up working with immigrants. He hired immigrants to work with us, you know, landscaping with us and all this stuff. And so we spoke Spanish, Spanglish, you know, like my dad, he's an interesting guy, very interesting guy. Probably that's a whole other topic that we could probably get into. But I grew up with immigrants and I knew how hard they worked. You know, there was a man named Castulo who had like six jobs, would work night and day. And I knew how hard they worked, knowing when they came to this country that there was no lazy, this stereotype of siestas all day and taking the Medicare and trying to take our jobs. Like, I know what they're doing. It was crazy. And so growing up and then hearing the kind of rhetoric later, okay, so I'm a comedian. And there's a comic who is more Mexican than me, let's say. And there's a comic that had a joke about he's Republican. And he's Mexican. And he's like, I go to MSNBC. They say, like, they're talking about immigrants. And they're like, you know, immigrants, they just want to come over and mow our lawns. They just want to have a good life and mow our lawns. And then he goes, so which side is really more racist? And I'm like, that's not true. That you didn't read that on MSNBC, you freaking liar. And so to answer your question, I feel like I can't say that because I don't have enough credit to do that because he's more Mexican than me, you know? Even though I grew up working with immigrants, I grew up, you know, around these people. I grew up, I know the knowledge. I studied race and ethnicity in college, but because he grew up first generation in Texas or whatever, I can't fight him on it. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the part where I'm like, I struggle with.
Do you find that different groups of immigrants, depending on when they came to the U.S., how far along they are in terms of how many generations have lived here, try to gatekeep and preserve traditions in ways where they make it difficult for newcomers to connect with them? I know you mentioned how, you know, there are racist people who have these stereotypes around immigrant identity, but I also see immigrants talking about the newcomers in a very similar fashion, right? Talking about entitlement, being lazy, we came this way. I see that gatekeeping a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely feel that there is a little bit of gatekeeping there. We grew up with a lot of other things going on. My grandmother's mother was an alcoholic. My grandfather was an alcoholic. They grew up in a very much kind of a dysfunctional family. I look at my aunts and uncles and my father as the archetypes of a dysfunctional family. You know, I don't know if you know much about that, but they're like there's like seven archetypes and they all fit like to a pin of the archetypes, to almost to the point of like, they're like almost like wrestling characters. They're like the perfect representation of that. So as far as the gatekeeping in our family, there was this, but personally, I think the gatekeeping of it is a lot of, it's like a lack of empathy, I think.
But that's a judgment call as well, assuming that somebody doesn't have empathy. I feel we are all a product of our circumstances. And sometimes we see the world through a certain lens. And you're right, we'll be more empathetic towards ourselves always, right? So when we feel threatened, we have our guard up. And maybe that sometimes manifests in apathy more. In some ways. But Adam, I do want to pivot. You've mentioned alcohol a few times, and you've been on this sobriety journey. And rather than asking you what triggered that, I want to know how you've managed to stay the course.
Well, I was in a treatment. I live in California, and we have a Kaiser here, which is like it's a hospital, a statewide hospital. It's like the closest thing to socialist hospital that we have here, I guess you could say. But they have a in-treatment drug program there, and I got into their drug alcohol program. And it wasn't necessarily like a 12-step program, but they did give me into weekly meetings where we would talk and get into therapy. And I found that to be so helpful. But then they also hooked me up with a psychiatrist to talk about my anger issues and my anxiety issues, which turns out drinking is just kind of the tip of the iceberg to a lot of other things. And I learned about the iceberg of anxiety and how that manifests. And I kind of realized that like I would be drinking sometimes just to kind of fall asleep. Well, I don't know, maybe there, some people relate to this, but I would, you know, like I would drink to be like, oh, it's Friday night, I want to sleep. I would, you know, after a hard week or something, like I'm going to drink a few beers and I'm going to pass out real well. And, well, you know, it's not always helpful because sometimes you don't, or, you know, and then the next day you feel so terrible and you don't accomplish all the things, and that it provides more anxiety and you feel more worthless or whatever and provides worth. Turns out you could just take a sleeping pill and it was even better. You know, you accomplish so much more. There's less calories involved in that too. Almost zero, turns out. But, not here to push any pills or anything like that, but getting more sleep totally helped. But truthfully, I didn't want to end up in a dysfunctional family. I wanted to kind of break the cycle a little bit. I wanted to be a better husband. I'm married. I don't have any kids. I do have a dog and a cat. And my cat is bugging me right now to feed her. I had to give her some treats. But I love them very much as if they were my children. And actually, it's funny. My cat and my dog are like very empathetic. If I ever get mad, they sense it. Or if I ever something's off in the house, they sense it.
Yeah, I have a kitten. We got him like 4 months ago. He's 7 months old. And I kid you not, he's changed my life forever. He makes me so calm. And I can't stop cuddling with him. And, you know, just being in his presence makes me so happy. And even now, before the interview started, I was debating whether I should just let him roam around or let him sit in my lap, or should I just put him in the room? And then I was like, no, it'll be distracting, because when he's around, then I can't stop like playing with him. Animals are the best companions you can have.
They really are. Especially if you're going through something too, or you need a little bit of, if you need something to take care of or maybe notice you or distract yourself, they're very helpful for that. I mean, the reason therapy dogs don't hate anybody out there hating therapy dogs. If you see somebody taking a dog on a plane, you don't know what they're going through. You know, you don't know. Those people might need them. And hey, try it sometime, you know, they're very nice.
I heard cats can sense ghosts.
Mm.
I don't know where I read this. The current house that we live in, the previous homeowner, she died here. She was 103 years old. And I just sometimes feel like her ghost is somewhere in this house. And it really freaks me out. So I'm like, okay, now I have a kitten and maybe he can sense it. And especially when he's doing his zoomies at night, I'm like, maybe he's seeing the ghost or something. I don't know. Do you believe in ghosts?
I believe, I'm open to it. We've done a few ghost stories on our show because they're always really fun. Sometimes they're very spooky and stuff like that. So, and I have a few ghost stories myself. I wouldn't be surprised if cats can see them though. My cat is running around constantly at night. So that would mean my house is very haunted, if that's true. Maybe I got to call Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Or our cat is being cat. In one of your interviews, you said something about the strange side of a 35-year-old getting wasted. And it really struck me seeing how ubiquitous alcohol consumption is in the U.S. You know, you'll see ads around no smoking, but then alcohol is fine, right? What role do you think society plays in how people interact with alcohol? And why do you think it seems okay, at least on surface, if someone were 21 getting wasted versus 35?
I think it's easier to, I mean, it's all about consumerism at the end of the day. I think it's easier to package, hey, nightlife equals alcohol, restaurants, tourism, fashion, travel, nightlife. That is somebody trying to sell you American consumerism all in one night. And then culturally, to throw a cigarette on top of that, it's like, you know, like we have culturally been like, ew, we don't want that, you know? If we were to culturally be like, you know, like, ew, drinking, ew, or, you know, even to put a vape in there, like, ew, or something like that. Or if we were to culturally be like, ew, you're wearing a dress that was made by like teenagers in Thailand, ew, you know, like there, we would culturally be able to do that. But right now we're just only doing that to cigarettes, truthfully. I mean, I'm a blackout drunk. That's why I'm like, it's you to be like 35. I think it's personally like it makes sense when you're 21 and you're partying, or I don't know if it makes sense, but like.
Yeah, that's my question. And it goes back to what you just said, like culturally, it makes sense. Because to me, even for a 21-year-old, it doesn't make sense. I mean, the alcohol industry is doing a phenomenal job of, you know, making sure it doesn't change.
I mean, there's a lot of things. Like, to me, I grew up in an era, so, you know, I'm 37-ish, and I grew up in the era of, like, the American Pie movies where, like, parties on the weekends and ragers and, you know, drink when mom's away and stuff like that. And so I think because there's a taboo for it, like drinking, it's illegal. You know, there's a puritanic culture behind drinking and partying and, you know, do it while you're 20 and then you got to shape up sort of vibe. And then you realize that no one actually ever shapes up and it's actually just really well hidden later. You know, that's the rub. You know, you realize like, oh, actually everybody is still alcoholic. They just are, you know, they have jobs now. It's all a lie. But I think it's because it's so hidden. People are told not to do it so early and it's so taboo. And because it's in the, you know, for me, it was in the movies and highlighted in that way. Not to say like the movies like glorified it.
But they do glorify it in some ways, right? We see when people are anxious, stressed, sad, happy, we'll see alcohol in the frame in some capacity. You don't see somebody drinking water when they're happy or drinking orange juice when they're happy. They'll open a wine bottle or something.
I wonder if it's glorifying or if it's just showing what kids are doing, or like, you know, like Mad Men, right? Like they drink so much, but ultimately all of those people are so miserable and they all ruin their lives. So it's like, is it glorifying? But then there's those people that see that and they're like, they want to be Mad Men. And it's like, well, you're kind of missing the point. You know, it's like the people that see It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and they're like, I want to be like them. What's like, well, these are purposely bad people. You're kind of missing the point of the show. So it's like, it's that thing of like responsibly putting out art and then still people taking it the wrong way. And it's like, how do you fix that?
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
But the glorification of it, it's very hard. I think kids will want to drink just because it's something to do, and fixing individual pain. I mean, there's so much boredom in America. There's so much mental strife, I guess you could say, going on in people's lives that they do need to let off steam. That unfortunately, you know, they see TV and, you know, they're 20, you know, not developed brains. They're like, oh, that looks good. You know, like, so it's hard to sue that. But if I were to say, to speak to the culture of it, a random pitch would be more cops should show up in movies. All of them should get busted. I think anytime underage drinking should happen. I think that's just like, make it more scary in movies. I think that maybe that's what happens. I don't know.
As a comedian, how do you draw from personal experiences? And how do you develop empathy through that process? Because sometimes I find comedians to be very self-centered.
To be clear, you know, I don't have any comedy specials coming out anytime soon, but I am working on it, and I do find it funny. Like, I feel like, you know, I have been kind of wrestling with like stand-up comedy, or comedy in general, is kind of like one of the most toxic things you could possibly be doing. You know, it's like only talking about yourself. You are making fun of something, you know, like you're not like elevating a conversation. You're talking about the base things, but
yeah, but you're making people laugh.
You're making people laugh. Right. And that's what I try to remember. You know, I was just kind of maybe in a bad spot thinking about that. So where I pull my stuff from is anytime that I feel, oh, like maybe shame or something that I feel like, oh, like maybe I wouldn't tell this. This would be something it'd be hard to confess. Like, oh, it's like, because there's something funny about a confession to me. I don't know. Because there's a level of, you know, going back to the culture, like chisme. People love chisme, which is a, you know, like a, in the Mexican culture, it's like drama. You know, like people love that, right? So if you hook them with that and then you have a funny story, I don't know, I love laughing at myself. So anytime I can talk about myself, but then also make fun of myself, that's where I try to pull most of my stuff. I try not to make fun of other people unless it's somebody either on the equal footing as me or above. Anybody lower than me, it's like, well, you know, I try not to. Speaking of conversations, I love talking to the audience in the shows. Most of my shows are geared towards like, I have a bit, but then I open the conversation up to the audience to see, you know, like what their experience is. Like I have a lot of tattoos. So I talk to people about their tattoos. And that is always a fun experience because people have terrible tattoos. Always. There's always a terrible tattoo. And it's always fun. And it's been very fruitful as of late. I mostly pull from things that, yeah, like I have a terrible tattoo and or there's one of terrible tattoos, something I don't like talking about, but it's funny. And, you know, they say, you know, comedy is, you know, pain plus time or whatever. And if I'm okay laughing about it, I think I'm sure plenty of other people enjoy talking about it too or laughing about it too.
Is there a story or an interaction that really stands out to you that you had with your audience?
Let's see. There's one that came to mind very recently that I don't know how funny it is, but it's very interesting. So this was right after the election and we were right in the heart of LA. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversations about what's going on with young Americans, men, what's going on with these guys? What's going on? And there was this young couple in the audience. And I think earlier on, somebody had said, like, who voted for Trump? And this young couple was like loud and proud, woo! And I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. Let's do this. So I go up on stage and I'm kind of doing my stuff and it's going okay. One of the things I talk about on stage, and it's not even like, this is like one of those things where I don't even have any real material about it, but I find it to be funny to talk about, just to bring about on stage. It's very low, to be fair. So I'm almost ashamed to talk about it on this very high end show. But I ask them, anybody here have any threesomes, right? And immediately, this Trump supporter was like, no. They were like, no. No, it's a mental illness. Nope, we don't do this here. No, no, no. And I was like, mental illness? What? They're like, no, we don't do that California mental illness here. I was like, what is going? I was like, what? What mental ill? What are you talking about? What is going on with your generation? It's just crazy. It was wild interaction. So, but it was also like one of those things that encapsulated like, I think our younger generation is being psyoped by a 3-hour hypnotism of Joe Rogan and the Liver King into thinking that like sexual exploration is a mental illness and you should move to California and heckle comedians or something like that.
It's interesting how younger generation is interacting with content in such a unique fashion, right? On the one hand, we see these young men across the board in different countries, even in Pakistan, who are obsessed with people like Joe Rogan, Andrew Tate. I'm not saying Joe Rogan is Andrew Tate. I just want to clarify that. But maybe they feel like there is a lot of judgment on them. And hence, they are reacting to that judgment. But the way they are latching on to these characters and these caricatures of what a real man should look like and how they should embody certain values, it's scary to me. I have two girls. I don't have a boy. But I've heard this from so many people. You've mentioned this, but have you seen this around, like, in the community, in people that you hang out with, this notion of we need to be emancipated.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm also trying to like work on of like what happened to men. Like men weren't great, but we weren't like this. You know, like we weren't like that. Like what did SpongeBob do this to our kids? Like what happened? Why? I think like I truly feel like this is a conspiracy theory for sure. But I feel like Joe Rogan is a psyop to brainwash. Like that's why it's 3 hours long. It's like it's to brainwash you.
Oh my gosh, his podcast episodes are so fucking long.
It's 3 hours long to lull you into like a beta wave, into turning you into some alpha, I guess. I don't know.
When I think of validation and seeing somebody else's perspective, I feel it should apply universally. So sometimes I do pause and think as to what's happening with young men. I'm sure the way they are acting is a symptom of something that they've been feeling or exposed to. I want to say something like, I see you, I hear you, I see your pain, but let's not self-destruct.
Yeah. Well, it's going back to, I think it's a little bit of social media. I think there is the algorithm on Instagram is pushing a lot of beauty influencers and men are seeing this and wanting to attain that, maybe learning a lot of bad habits and not necessarily, you know, learning to interact in a great way. I'm going to go back to my point of, you know, having one of the videos and all the comments were amazing and very supportive and beautiful. I had another video go viral where it was an adult film actress talking to a kind of YouTuber and kind of slamming him for asking her just a disgusting question.
If you had a child that wanted to get into pornography, an 18-year-old, of course, you would support them getting into it, correct?
Yeah. You know, you ask the most like basic, arrogant, disgusting questions.
Well, cause people...
No, like I just need to let you know, like you're a little prick. And you're lucky that I've even sat here this long and entertained this conversation. But yeah, I don't care as long as they're happy. But you ask.
If you were to watch this video, it would be just hands down, like good for that adult star. Well done. If you go to the comments, it's a 50-50 of women supporting her, like, good job, heck yes. And then men being like, what's wrong? What, she can't answer an easy question? Oh my gosh. To the point where it got so viral where the adult star ended up commenting, being like, thank you so much for both of you commenting on this. This is great. Thank you so much. And then the guy commenting on it too. And both holding ground on being like, I was just asked, every other person I asked was very supportive about this question, you know, like, it's one of those things where something about what they're seeing on Instagram or comparing it to what they're seeing online, maybe it's not necessarily Instagram, and going back to what we were saying before of empathy, if, you know, if it applies to me, but not to them, I think it's a little bit of that.
I do think they're trying to also somehow, some of them, not all, in their minds, trying to reclaim that lost glory of manhood, whatever that means to them. And it is such a messed up place to be because I do see dichotomy there as well. I see even these figures, whether it's Joe Rogan or others, on the one hand, yes, they will say things that are extremely problematic, but then in the same breath, they will say something that will resonate or humanize them, which makes it difficult for people who look up to them to fully hate or love them.
The messaging is confusing. Yeah, because there are like, yeah, I think Jordan Peterson, who's another, can be lumped into one of those. He gets asked a question and he's like, starts crying and he's like, who's going to stand up for lonely men? And it's like, well, yeah, that's a great motto, but you're also telling them to be weirdos. Like that's... Like, your mission's great, but how you're going about it is terrible, you know? Like,
it is terrible. It is terrible. Adam, what have you learned from your guests on the podcast?
I've learned that, truthfully, you cannot judge a book by its cover. People that I thought were going to be one certain way were ended up blowing my mind in the wildest of ways. And I've learned that you could always expect someone to blow your mind in the wildest of ways. That's what I guess I've learned.
And in the end, if you were to describe the United States of America post-election in this present moment, how would you do that?
Waiting to see what happens.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. Adam, where can people find your podcast? And you said there is no upcoming show, but where can people find you? Is there a website?
Yes. You can find our podcast at That Was Wild Net. We post a new show every Monday on all the podcast feeds, including YouTube, where you can watch it. Exclusive video on YouTube, but you can listen to it everywhere else. You can watch our viral clips on That Was Wild Pod on TikTok and Instagram and everywhere else. And you can find me at Adam R. Mack on Instagram, where I post funny videos, some sketches, and some stand-up clips.
Thank you, Adam. This was wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I enjoyed this conversation so much, and I kid you not, you have to check Adam's podcast. That was wild. It is so much fun, and they really break down important, complex topics into these bite-sized, fun, easy-to-digest conversation pieces. I will be listening to this podcast. It's on my list of, you know, regular podcast listens now. I hope you like this conversation. If you have thoughts, if you have ideas, if you have any feedback for us, you can always reach out to me at sadia@immigrantlypod.com. You can follow us on all our socials. We are on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. We're everywhere. This episode was produced by me, written by me. The editorial review was done by Shay Yu. Our sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin. Our theme music is done by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Epidemic Sound. Come back next week when I have another important, fun, and introspective conversation. Take care. Bye.